Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me is Ty Libby and Jansen Mizrak.
Deep freeze, Andy.
I knew I could count on a weather update from you, Ty.
It's so cold.
Do you know what the temperature is currently?
We can find out.
Let's look it up.
-4 about an hour ago.
-4. It was colder yesterday, so it's Wednesday. We closed down all operations. Yeah. You can't even golf indoors when it's -20.
It's -2 currently.
It's -2. So if it's -2, you can golf indoors. The cube is hopping. A lot of people here. It's pretty cold. My toes are cold. I sat in the back room for too long. I can't feel them. But we're here, that we won't let it stop us, you know, from making a podcast.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Exactly. Jansen, how you doing?
I'm good.
You're not used to this type of weather.
Yeah, not so much. You know, I actually used yesterday as a day to catch up on some sleep. I didn't realize how worn out I was, but feeling good, back in action today, and hunkered down yesterday. It was quite an experience.
I mean, you're wearing this camo boxing hoodie.
I bought a hoodie at my gym yesterday. Just an extra layer, and I wore it today, and I don't think I'm going to take it off.
I mean, I'm a little worried you're going to punch me.
No.
Okay.
Perhaps a little off topic, but how does boxing relate to golf, Jansen?
It's helped my golf game a lot. Just the functional movements of it, the core strength of it, the coordination, footwork. You can't throw a powerful punch if you don't have a good base. And so, I think we kind of talked about in a previous podcast, things like, your cross crawl patterns and how you walk and how you move and athletic functions. And so those just general athletic functions of how your glutes and lats work together and how your abductors and how your obliques work together as you're walking and moving. It's the same thing when you're throwing a punch, and then it's the same thing if you're trying to run or sprint or be coordinated and swing a golf club.
So are you actually sparring with people? Are you getting hit in the face?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I have not sparred with headgear on, but I spar just body shots all the time.
Cool.
It's fun. Yeah.
What's a better feeling, a well-struck 7-iron or punching someone in the face?
I don't know. They're both pretty satisfying.
What?
They're so different, but I'd go with a perfectly struck driver over the punch. But a 7-iron, I'd rather punch someone in the face.
Wow.
Anyways, great way to start the podcast.
Yeah, get to know you a little better.
Don't Welsh on bets with Jansen.
Yeah.
So, guys, I have a general idea of talking about change in golf and when we make changes and why one would make changes. And I have a few somewhat unrelated categories to go through, but hopefully we'll all tie together in the end.
Cool.
My first question is, how did you learn to putt? Jansen.
That's a great question. How did I learn how to putt? I really don't know. The first thing that pops to mind when you ask that question is how I used to grip my putter. And I used to have this, I actually went back to that putter. You know that white TaylorMade that I'm using right now?
Yes.
It's pretty old TaylorMade Rosa. And that was like the first putter that I bought with my own money in like seventh grade. And I used to grip it with both my thumbs running down the grip, like pointing down the shaft, like a split grip, with my elbows flared out, and I would just rock that thing. And then I started to realize as I got older, and it wasn't like through instruction or anything, that my distance control was just horrible. And so then I put my hands together on the grip. I just decided to change one day because I saw all my friends, that's how they held the putter. And then I started making more putts, and my distance control was better just through repetition. So I guess that's how I kind of knew like how I was going to change my putting to putt better, just by observing others. But how I learned to putt was really just kind of getting thrown out onto it. You know, in the the golf camp that kind of got the spark fired up for me for golf. There were all sorts of putting games and drills that we would do, and the coaches would always say, hey, you know, putting is a really important part of the game, and you can't ignore it, so we're going to spend a lot of time here. And I was like, all right, I'm on board. I can get behind that. Let's do it. So
I'm particularly interested in the steps you took to get to where you are now. So it seems like you just started putting your own way with a split grip, and then you noticed you were doing it differently than other people, mm-hmm. so you changed. And then since then, you've made other changes. What has that been based on?
Yeah, so then I switched. After I did that, I actually switched to left-hand low grip because my dad...
What?
Yeah, my dad...
I've heard you, like, really, well, really be judgmental about the left-hand low.
No, not at all.
All right.
I'll get into it. I'll talk about my opinion on that. So I putted left-hand low all throughout high school and all throughout college, so like 8 years and maybe nine. Well, I felt like I had phenomenal face control with that, especially with my short putts. Again, I would go through phases with putters where I felt like my distance control was off, but I always felt like my stroke was in a pretty good spot. And that was always the strength of my game, especially in high school, because I did not hit the ball far. And in college, especially the first 2 years in college, I would make everything I looked at. It was just a strength of my game, and I knew it needed to be a strength of my game because I didn't hit the ball very far. So I'd always spend more time on the putting green than just about anybody else. And I just find joy on the putting green. When I moved up here and I started getting introduced to more putting techniques and other things, and I was kind of, I would say I was probably in a bit of a slump in my putting at that time, I decided to change my grip again, and I went to the reverse overlap grip that Chris taught me, and that's how he grips the putter. That's how Stan Utley grips the putter, and a lot of other people. And it gave me comfort because with my left hand low, I used to, with my left index finger, I had to run it down the shaft like a trigger, and with the reverse overlap, I still have that left index finger kind of as a trigger. So it gave me comfort in the fact that like my left hand felt like it was in a very similar position on the grip, but my right hand was different. And now my elbows were more in line with one another and I was able to swing the club head more freely. So it was not as tough of a transition as I thought it was going to be. And I saw results almost immediately. So that's what got me bought in to change to my most recent putting stroke.
And that's the last change you made?
I'd say that's the last major change I've made in my putting stroke.
How about you, Ty? How did you learn how to putt?
I'm not sure I know how to putt. But after working with Jansen, you know, first real putting lesson I've ever had, I'm not really sure. You know, I kind of just lined it up and thought about speed and my line and tried to make it go in the hole. But it's a lot more complicated than I thought it was. The drills that you guys have set up for classes here in the Cube have been helpful for me as far as having my eyes over the ball and some of the technology you've used as far as improving my timing. Tend to be too slow taking it back, which affects my accuracy. So working on tempo and posture.
Yeah, posture is huge.
How did you know? Did you just like guess from watching people how to set up and how to putt?
Yeah, basically, absolutely. I'm not really sure any other way I would have learned how to do it. So yeah, watching people on TV, watching my dad on the putting green at the course, it turns out I was doing a lot of stuff wrong, which Jansen has helped correct.
Okay.
I wouldn't say necessarily. I think it's so interesting to watch people set up to a putt, especially like newer players or people that have putt a certain way for a really, really long time, and then they finally ask for some help. And people get in some really like hunched over, crouched down, you know, quote unquote, like athletic positions. Whatever, I think people get into whatever position they feel like is going to give them the biggest advantage to like see the line, make a good like half feel and touch and make a repetitive stroke. So like some people really get hunched over and they're actually like really restricting themselves, but in their minds it's almost like, hey, like the less like crazy movement that's going on, the more control I have over this. And so like straight back, straight through, like I'm just gonna hit.
Yeah, that's thing, how I know? Was true. Yeah. yeah and incorrect, probably not the right word, but inconsistent. And yeah. So the tips that you've shown me really helped me be more consistent in putting. So yeah,
cool. Well, I kind of learned somewhat similar to you guys of just watching other people, maybe reading Golf Digest. And I think in high school, I probably had a very like rigid putting stroke, kind of stiff generally. Try to do as best like straight back, straight through. I would always like push putts, and I would kind of have this loop that went. I would have like outside to in, and cut across the ball. That's kind of how I putted for a long time. Up until we went to a Stan Utley clinic, which we've documented on this podcast a lot, and he talked about adding more wrist to it, having like a longer backstroke, using something called dead weight, where he just lets like the gravity kind of bring the putter into the ball. And I was, you know, I was sold. You see Stan hit a putt and he rolls it as good as anyone, and it's like this is the way. And so I worked probably, you know, for like many months up, you know, when did we go to that? July?
Something like, yeah, you put a lot of work into your putting, I'd say the month leading up to that clinic. And then even afterwards, like 2 or 3 months, you put a ton of work into your putting stroke. And it shows.
Yeah. Well, so now I'm at a crossroads, though, which I'll get into. Because, my stroke got a lot better into that point. Basically a longer stroke with more wrist, letting the putter kind of flow nicely. I felt pretty good about where I was at. But then, like last month, Chris bought this thing for M360 called Blast Motion, and it's this sensor that you put on the butt end of your putter, and it tracks basically everything about your putting stroke. And at first, I was kind of skeptical because, you know, I like to think of myself as this golf purist. You know, like who needs a technology? I like playing with half sets of clubs, just kind of walking around in the field, looking at the clouds, right? Rather than like
canal shores.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Rather
shout out.
Yeah. Rather than just like using all the technology available to optimize my game. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Golfing purist is perfect.
Okay. But I gave it a chance, and I've been spending a lot of time with Blast Motion. He's become one of my best friends around here. Sensor. Mr. Blast. Wants you to have what they did with these sensors, they gave them to a bunch of tour pros and they had them hit lots of putts with them. So they came up with like the tour average of tempo, of face rotation, of all these different things. And they found that the average tempo for a tour player is a 2-to-1 like backstroke to forward stroke ratio, with the backstroke being 0.6 seconds and the forward stroke being 0.3 seconds. And so I thought that was cool. Let's see if I can do that. And I thought it would be pretty easy to do that or make changes, but it's actually pretty hard. I found when my natural putting motion was 1.5-to-1 because I could bring it back at about 0.6 seconds, but my way through was much too slow. And then whenever I like made my forward stroke faster, it just like pounded the ball way past the hole if it didn't go in. So the distance control was terrible, and I was really like confused as to what to do. Stan Utley has this ruler that we have that kind of says how far back you should take it in relation to how far forward your putt should go. And I asked Jansen, and we were like messing with it and trying. We found it was like really, really hard to do the Stan Utley method and still get the tempo that Blast was looking for. And we almost, I think we're maybe, I mean, maybe this can change. Who knows? Maybe Stan will listen to this podcast and tell us we're wrong and we're mischaracterizing him. But it's like pretty, really, really, really hard to get the tempo right. I would say impossible based on what I understand of the way he teaches. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And it was very challenging to use use that ruler and use his method of like truly letting the club head just drop and swing a lot and get the 2-to-1 ratio. Now, the ruler that Utley uses is a ruler that's based on the 2-to-1 ratio because the backstroke is like significantly longer than the follow through. And so that was the first thing that was like, wow, these seem very contradicting. But you know, even with like, you know, how fast these greens rolled, like we went back on the ruler for like what a 4-foot putt was all the way back to like 12 feet.
Yeah.
And we were still, still couldn't do it. So, it was very interesting, seeing that.
Yeah. So this brings us to my crossroads of, I was very convinced after seeing Stan Utley putt and the way he taught, and you know, Chris bought as you know, we teach that method at our academy, right? In our putting, we teach use a little more wrist, things like that. But I was very convinced that this is the way to do it. But then when I get to this blast motion and I actually tried to figure out how to get a 2-to-1 ratio, you have to putt different. Like, I can't take as big of a backstroke. I can't let the putter drop as fast, because basically letting the putter drop using gravity, you're not going as fast as the blast tells you to go. But when I can actually get it, when I can get the 2-to-1 ratio, it almost puts a better, it feels like it puts a better roll on the ball. And so now I'm conflicted. Do I go with this new putting stroke that's like shorter and more compact and not as flowy and letting the putter drop, or do I go with the Stan Utley method? And I guess the question is, how would you know what which one to do?
Right. I think you can buy into both, right? Because Utley is one of the best putters in the world, one of the best short game instructors in the world, and we know that that method works, right? We know that energy from the club head needs to be put into the ball, and really the only way to do that is by anchoring, you know, having like the anchor of the grip, being aware of where what the handle of the putter is doing, and this goes for wedging as well, and letting the club head, like you said earlier, have dead weight with a nice abbreviated follow through. Now, with that being said, it's easy to buy into the blast motion too, because they have how many strokes on file, like 200 million strokes or something crazy like that from all the best players in the world. And so, you know, the numbers don't lie. And so, you know, I think that it does put in a really nice roll on the ball when you're able to match your rotation change and your face rotation and have a nice tempo. And when your tempo is closer to that 2-to-1, how your face rotation and all these other numbers and metrics that blast captures, how those get tightened up too. Mm-hmm. So obviously I think blast, I think probably the most important metric, or they would say, would be the tempo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that they track. So it's hard. You know,
it's tough.
It's truly a crossroads situation.
Yeah, because you can't really do both. You have to choose one or the other. And
so here's what I was thinking about when Andy and I spent some time with the blast, because you had spent a lot of time and got your tempo down, and I couldn't have done it. What was my average, you think?
It was similar to mine. It's like 1.5-to-1.
Yeah, it's like 1.5, 1.6-to-1, and so then I ended up getting it to 2-to-1, and it felt, like you said, shorter, more compact, and a little faster on the way through. And I think our mechanics of our putting strokes are still very Utley-based. We still use a lot of wrist in the backstroke, and we still allow the putter head to drop. It's just on a smaller scale. And I think when you learn the Utley method, you have to over-exaggerate it to a certain extent of being like extremely wristy and feeling like super loosey-goosey. At least for me, that's what I had to feel when I started putting this way and with my wedging. And then once you get the technique down and the mechanics of it, then you can tighten it up. But you can't go straight to that end result. You have to kind of go to the extreme of, in my opinion, feeling really, really loosey-goosey, and then you can tighten it up. And I think that's what we're experiencing right now with the blast motion. It's just kind of getting it dialed in, if you will. Because if we were to, and this, we should do this afternoon or later, is we should film from face on view on slow-mo video and see what those two putting strokes look like. Other than the actual distance that we take it back, you know, I think we're still using the same amount of, like, same ratio of wrist, like hinge or wrist break in our putting stroke. It's just not as pronounced, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ty? What should I do?
Whatever's most comfortable, honestly. And yeah, figure, you know, practicing, playing around with your putting stroke is important. And I mean, you'll figure it out over time. You guys certainly put in the work. But I'm interested, like, who's your favorite putter on tour? Are you guys looking at videos of people putting other than Stan Utley, trying to figure out what you like? Or how are you, just playing, experimenting with your own stroke?
Well, what I'm kind of interested in and what I want to research a little bit more are, there's certainly people on tour and people that I enjoy watching putt. And I would say, like, my top people would be Ricky Fowler. I absolutely love that putting stroke. He's extremely wristy. in his putting stroke. And I want to know what his tempo ratios are. I want to know what his rotation changes, all of those things. His backstroke time, his forward stroke time. You think you'd look that up? Maybe.
I'm looking.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would be cool. I love Justin Thomas's putting stroke, but he's not nearly as wristy. He looks a little more rigid in a sense, and he almost looks like he takes the putter back like low and slightly shut, and then just really holds it square on the way through. Mm-hmm. But his setup is like perfect. Yeah. Those are kind of my top two guys that I like watching at the moment.
Yeah, I like Fowler too. He had wristy stroke, very like. If you're wondering what the Stan Utley method is, I think Ricky Fowler shows it the best.
Yeah, I agree.
So Ricky Fowler, he's a short guy. What do you think? Is he your height?
Yeah,
maybe shorter.
He's 5'7" or 5'8".
Yeah, 5'7" or 5'8". And did you know he uses a 35-inch putter?
Yeah.
And so that like lets him really like keep his elbows in and lets like the stroke lets him be able to really swing the putter. Being that short, using the long putter. Whereas if I were to like match his setup with my height, I would need like a 38-inch putter.
Yeah.
And then I can't swing it the same way because 38 inches is too long. You know, like from where your hands are to the actual putter head, like moving my hands like half an inch to take it back would bring that putter back further back than Ricky's 35-inch putter that he's bringing back. So it's like when I try to copy it, I can't because I think that I'm too tall.
Yeah, because your body.
Yeah.
What's a standard length putter?
34?
It just depends on your... 33 to 35 are what... Like, you could go to the PGA Superstore and they would have those for every model. I have mine at 36, but I still... To get to Ricky's, like, setup, I would have to go even longer than that. Mm-hmm. But then by then, it's just, like, too heavy and it'd be really tough to do, so...
I think I'm putting with a 33 and a half right now.
Something like that.
And I used to have a 35, and I didn't like how much elbow bend I had, and so that's why I went shorter, because I bow over more than like Ricky does.
Yeah.
So, like, on the other end of the spectrum from Ricky, like Bryson, he seems pretty rigid, pretty mechanical.
Very, very.
But, you know, top five player in the world, right?
Right. Works.
Different strokes for different
He's got folks. A long putter that he, like, almost holds it like Kuchar. He's got a graphite shaft in his putter. I tried to copy it this week. It's a pretty cool putter I made. Yeah, check it out. It's sitting around here somewhere. But yeah, it's cool seeing the different ways that they do it. I mean, I just bought a Bloodline putter that stands up on its own. You don't even have to put your hands on it.
So cool.
It's interesting seeing all the different ways people putt and how effective it all can be. It seems like each teacher who teaches and is famous is like, this is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're seeing now that there's so many different ways.
There's a lot of different ways. And I think another cool factor of it is just your body type and your build. You know, how is that affecting your posture? What type of putter do you need to be able to get you in a decent posture? I think most instructors can probably agree that having the putter head flat on the ground is like very important. And so how does that affect your setup? Having that shaft run as an extension of your arms is very important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eye line can be debated of where it should be, but, you know, there's a general rule that it should be over the ball, you know, right through the middle, or slightly just in the inside of the heel. And some people are further away and some people are right over. And so I think those are things that most people can agree with, you know, even like Bryson, you know, and like Matt Kuchar. You know, their arms are very stiff and extended, but the putter's an extension of the forearm, right? They got that long, forearm putter running up the left arm. But then you look at Ricky and his, you know, if you draw a line, it's right up through the forearms as well, and he's in a completely different position.
Yeah.
So there's so many different factors, but I think posture is a huge thing that plays a factor into what your stroke is going to look like.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's kind of, again... You make your own decision.
Yeah, I'm interested to see which way kind of like putting goes, because it seems like it's moving away from the Ricky style and more towards Bryson and like move as few muscles as you can, you know, right? Like let's keep those arms in a lock and then rotate your shoulders a little bit and that's how you putt.
Yeah,
it's just interesting that people are still like figuring this out or figuring out what the most effective way to putt is.
And a game changer, Bryson. You know this. You know the science behind it. And again, like I said earlier, the numbers don't lie. And he's got a very interesting way of putting. If you haven't watched the Playing with the Pros, I think it is, where Sean Foley and Bryson are out playing. Bryson does a great job of explaining his methods on the golf course, what he's taking into account, and especially in regards to what he takes into account when he's hitting putts of different distances. So I'd encourage our listeners to go watch that because it's pretty cool.
But even to get a little bit more simple, so stuff I didn't know until started having an in-depth conversation with you guys. So when you're putting, you want a slightly positive attack angle, right? You're hitting up slightly on the ball. The putting stroke has an arc to it, which I never realized till you really sit down and think about it.
But again, Bryson's like
does not
very little, right. If any.
But it still so does. It's tough.
I mean, just because it's impossible not.
It's impossible not to.
It's impossible not to. Yeah. But his arc compared to Tiger Woods is he relatively has no arc, you know, basically
because he's standing so close and upright to the ball. Mm-hmm. But he's still standing away from the ball, so there's still an arc.
Yeah, there still has to be a little bit of an arc, but
just interesting to me. I'd encourage folks who might not know the ins and outs of putting to experiment with their own stroke and understand the arc and understand how you want to make impact with the ball.
Yeah, and it's cool having things like technology, like video and the blast motion, that can actually give you feedback as to what works, right? Before, you know, in all of our stories as we're making changes, it's like, well, this person told us this, or I noticed I was doing something different than other people, so I changed that way. But now we have technology available to us where we can be like, oh, I made this change because I actually hit the ball straighter, and I know that for a fact based on this,
right?
Where you didn't really have that before. It was a lot of probably just guessing and the eye test.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is like very, very specific, pretty technical stuff. But I think blast is a great tool to be able to use for any level of player, because sometimes there's huge factors that need to be changed and will show results immediately with, you know, do I push or pull? Like, I think the blast is great. I love using the rotation change. You know, I used it with a couple of students this weekend, and, you know, we consistently saw with one of the students that he opens the putter back and then he never rotates it enough to be back to square, and he misses every putt right. You know, that's pretty powerful information.
Yeah.
And his stroke looked pretty good to the eye, but, you know, it doesn't matter how good of an instructor you are. You're not going to be able to see that or know 100% that he's consistently not rotating it or squaring it up enough without an aid like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could set up chalk lines and all of these things and make sure his alignment is perfect, and then you'd probably be able to know. But to know 100% and know for sure that that's what's happening, that's like, makes my job easier.
Yeah.
And then it's going to make the student happier because he can buy into that technology. You know, the results are right there in front of him. And so it's cool to see.
Before we move on to the next category, we should probably say Blast isn't paying us for this.
Unfortunately.
But they could be. We buy it. We bought it ourselves, and we love it. So
it's a cool tool.
Yeah. Next category is George Gankus, who's been another one of my friends lately.
GG Swing Tips. GG.
We messaged on Instagram once. That's about it. I watch all of his videos on YouTube. He is the coach of Matt Wolf, who is playing in the Waste Management Phoenix Open as we speak. He's one under through nine holes. He has maybe the most unorthodox golf swing you'll ever see. If I were to describe it, I would say if you're looking at him setting up to the ball and you're like behind him, so like down the line, if you were to draw a line from his club head straight up in the air, his backswing, the club like stays on that line the whole time, and then he like whips it around and hits the ball. What do you say? That's accurate. A very long way.
Yeah, he like basically, if you watch him down the line, the club head makes a circle.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it, like, last night, my wife Jenny and I, we were watching George Gankus videos, as I'm sure most, you know, married couples do. And then I showed her. I showed, she was liking him because
she's a keeper.
I was like, this is like the best player that he coaches. And I showed her Matt Wolf swing, and she's like, that's disgusting. She couldn't even watch it. She's like, what is this? So that's the kind of swing it is. It doesn't look pretty at all, but it is very effective. And so as I've like researched a little bit about Matt Wolf and where he came from. Like, he started, he like came to George Gankus when he was 14, and he said that, I think 14, could be wrong. Every other coach he had went to tried to change his swing. Like, he always swung in this weird, wild way, and every coach tried to change it, but George Gankus was the only one who didn't, who said, like, I like the way you swing. Let's keep it. And now he's the number one, you know, college player in the country. He'll be a good PGA player, you know, it seems like. And so I guess my question, how this gets back to, like, when to change or how to change, is, like, if Matt Wolf, when he was 14, came to me with that swing, or any instructor, you know, most instructors would change that swing and then spend the next 4 years, he would spend the next 4 years, like, trying to get used to this new way of swinging, mm-hmm. and he probably would not be the number one ranked college player in the country. So how do you, like, Jansen, how do you think, do you know what I mean? Like, could have ruined Matt Wolf and made him not ever be good if he came to me and if he listened to me. But it's, as we see with him going George Gankus, who's maybe one of the only instructors in the country who would have kept that backswing, he's made it.
Right. Yeah, like, when do you know to draw the line, kind of?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think we face that every day with people. There's natural tendencies that you're always going to do in your swing. And what's okay, you just have to ask yourself why? Like, why are you going to change something? Mm-hmm. So when Gankus looks at that swing, he's saying, well, why would I change it? He gets great leverage on the club early, even though it's like crazy out in front of him, and he's able to shallow it out with the way his lower body works, and that's what they've worked on, is just perfecting his lower body torque and power and movement and how he launches off the ground. Mm-hmm. And so it's a repeatable golf swing. And so if you're going to change anything in somebody's golf swing, you have to ask why. Why are you going to change it? If you do change it, what are you going? What's the result or what's the goal out of it? And how is it going to affect other things that they do? So you just got to be able to trust your process of thinking in that way.
Yeah, and George Gankus always emphasizes, like, having proper leg work. Mm-hmm. He says, like, if you have the right leg work, it doesn't really matter how you take the club back. But if you don't have proper leg work, you have to, like, take it back perfectly on plane and hit all these perfect positions, or else it'll be really hard to play. Should more people, like, be exploring this? I feel like so much of the work on YouTube or even that we talk about here is all about, like, backswing and your positions you are and, like, getting on plane, where he seems to say, like, that actually doesn't matter as long as you do this one other thing and it, like, makes up for it.
Well, I admire that look at the game or look at the golf swing in that fashion. I think he's right. I can agree with him that as long as you can get to a repeatable spot in the backswing, then if your body can move in a way to get the club on plane in the downswing and shallow it out, then why worry about the backswing? And Matt Wolf's a perfect example of that, and a lot of his players are perfect examples of that. Who's the guy on the tour that he teaches?
Sun Kang. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
same thing. Pretty unique backswing, but it's repeatable. And mm-hmm. I mean, heck, look at Jim Furyk. Same thing. It's repeatable. Mm-hmm. He's able to shallow it out with the way his body works. I think that you still can't ignore. And I think George would probably agree with this. You can't ignore, like, wrist angles and hand path, you know. And those things are very important because that's how you're connecting yourself to the club and manipulating the club path and club face to be able to hit certain shots. So you can't ignore it 100%, but you can eliminate how much things you need to focus on if you have one, a good grip, and two, your lower body can be, and your body can just be strong through the ball and through impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just really interesting to think about. He says, like, in golf, we've missed, or, like, we haven't learned from other sports as well as we could, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he would say a golf swing compared to, like, throwing a ball are not that different, which we hear. We talk about how, like, throwing, and we have people throw things and hit things with hockey sticks and do all these other sports-related things to teach them how to play golf. But he like compares the top of the backswing to like if you're throwing a football, how the quarterback like stretches his arm back, or the baseball pitcher like stretches his arm back, like straight back behind them.
Yeah,
like
depth.
Yeah, so like that spot doesn't like you wouldn't go if you were throwing a ball, it's hard to describe, you know, you wouldn't like reach out in front of you and then like pick your arm straight up to this like perfectly L-shaped position and then throw from there. You like make the circle.
The wind up.
Yeah. And so I think it's a really interesting way of looking at it. Cause in golf we almost, I wonder if certain people too much look for like this perfect swing, and it almost looks like in search of a perfect swing, you're losing out on, you know.
Yeah, there's something appealing about just like a Tiger Woods perfectly on plane swing, or an Adam Scott. There's something appealing to that because it looks powerful. But you have to look at all the mechanics, and I mean, those guys are just freak athletes. I mean, I think I'm in pretty decent shape, and I can't get in half those positions, mm-hmm. So how am I going to be able to produce as much power and efficiency in my golf swing?
Yeah. Genkis has been working with Adam Scott. Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's wild. This guy has like the most beautiful swing ever. He's still like something else.
Yeah. I think I remember. Didn't he talk about that on the No Laying Up podcast of what he kind of tweaked with him? It's really just posture work, I think, and his weight distribution at address. His weight always gets out on his toes.
He's somebody that just figured out his putting stroke.
Yeah.
He should be
kidding.
Set up for a good season here.
Yeah. Back to the short putter, right?
Putting with the flag stick in.
No, he's using an arm lock putter. He's using Bryson style.
Is it still?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So
it's
not a lot. It's not like the broom handle thing. He's like putting like Bryson and Kuchar. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that is a shorter putter than he's used in a long, long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's true.
What's the best putt you have ever made? Short putt, long putt, important putt, by yourself, in competition? What's the best putt you've ever made?
You want to go first?
I don't know. I
could be a bad question.
I have three that stand out to me.
How about pick one of them?
Yeah. So one of them was in a tournament. It was cool. It was for Eagle. And then one was over this last summer. It was my only round under par this summer, and I made a putt to birdie at the last hole on 18. But I say the most important one, I made a 5-foot putt to get up and down. I made a 5-footer. To shoot under par for the first time ever.
Awesome.
Yeah, that one is pretty cool.
Oh, I think my best putt was probably that day we played at Canal Shores in the fog, and I made a birdie putt on birdie cam because I was thinking that day about like the No Laying Up and Eric Lang videos, where they're on the course and they're like making putts. And I'm like, those must be fake. Like they do it a million times to get the shot, and it looks like they're making putts all day. And then the one time we actually did it, I made it the first try.
Birdie cam.
Yeah. So that was
awesome.
I mean, I don't make a lot of eagles, so I think I'm too afraid to go that low, but it's all right. Maybe this will be a new.
Well, I had a good one last year at a Lake Bluff par three. I think it's 16.
Yeah, 16.
And hit a decent shot, but I probably had 40 feet back pin location uphill. And I drained it. I was by myself, and I just looked around. I was like, did anyone see that? That was so cool.
911, somebody called the bomb squad.
That's the first thing that comes to our mind. Yeah, bomb squad.
Well, all right, guys. Do you guys know the Ariana Grande song, Thank You, Next?
Oh, no, Andy.
No, you don't?
Can you sing it for us?
No, I can't sing it for you. So anyway, Ariana Grande apparently is, do you know who she is?
Yes.
Yeah, she's like dated a lot of people lately. But this song is like, she like goes through. So I'll just read some of these lyrics to you, Ty, and to our listeners. It starts out like this. Thought I'd end up with Sean, but he wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky. Now I listen and laugh. Even almost got married. And for Pete, I'm so thankful. Wish I could say thank you to Malcolm, because he was an angel. One taught me love, one taught me patience, and one taught me pain. Now I'm so amazing, but I've loved and I've lost, but that's not what I see. So look what I got, look what you taught me, and for that I say thank you, next. Thank you, next.
Poetry.
Yeah, it's really good.
Pure poetry.
Well, okay. At first, I really hated this song, but then, we had our snow day yesterday, so I just sat inside, bored, just thinking about random things.
Watching Genkis videos with your wife and listening to Ariana Grande.
Yeah, well, not at the same time.
What a day.
Okay. But to bring this back, I want to argue that maybe this is a super enlightened way to look at life and golf, in that maybe what we can learn from Ariana Grande is that, so normally, like, when we have, like, exes or we have, like, bad things happen to us, yeah, we're like, you know, like, screw those guys, like, I never learn anything from them, it's just, like, move on or whatever. But right, here she's, like, saying, like, thank you for what you taught me.
Yeah, okay? Thank you for the relationship.
Thank you for
your time.
Yeah, but, like, I've learned something from this bad situation. Mm. And so I was thinking about, like, in golf, you know, I tend to buy lots of golf equipment. Mm-hmm. So if in golf, if I'm playing bad, if I'm hitting bad drives for a few rounds, what I do is I just buy a new driver, sell the other one. Sure. Now I'm like on to the next one. But I was going to say, if I had an Ariana Grande way of looking at these bad drives, I would actually like take these misses and try to learn something from them, mm-hmm, and then make the change myself rather than just like covering it up with new equipment.
Would you need the help of 7 additional songwriters to do that?
Let's stay on topic.
7 swing coaches.
So what do you think about that, Coach Jansen?
I mean, it's the end of January, and you might have just come up with the best analogy of 2019.
Oh, thank you.
Do I think you're reading pretty deep into it? Yeah, but I think you're right. I think absolutely. You should be able to learn from your mistakes, you know, learn, yeah, from past experiences, and have an open mind to the future.
Yeah, I think it's Galway who, in The Inner Game of Golf, says, like, when you're on the range or when you're playing, never try to fix something immediately.
Yeah.
Right? So if on the first tee you hit a slice, don't try to fix that, because what happens is, like, you'll just overcorrect, and that'll cause another problem. You'll overcorrect again, that'll cause another problem. So the Ariana Grande way of looking at this is, like, you say thank you to that slice because it's teaching you something about your swing and about your tendencies. And so you actually have to, like, get to that point of awareness and learning before you can actually get better.
It's very mature, Andy.
Thank you.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, Ariana brought
us
here.
It's just so funny to be able to relate it to like, what, the number one song in the country right now.
Yeah. I think that'll be all for today.
Thanks, Andy.
Good conversation. Good topic.
To say thank you next to both of you.
Blast Motion. If you want to sponsor us, you know where we're at.
Blast Motion or Ariana Grande. If you want to come on, it's an open invitation.
We'd love to have you.
And love to talk about golf or anything. All right. Jansen's single? Yeah. Maybe? Yeah. Okay.
Clean contact.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, give us a single. Let us end the podcast.
Because that shot
here.
Right. Defining moment.
Bye, everyone.
And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment. Or the moment defines you.
Well, here it comes.